And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folt. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities mining in the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folt. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well, quite busy, Rob, in the summer doldrums. That's welcomed, I think.
Welcome indeed. Summer doldrums, but I know that you've been jet-setting all over the place. It's nice to keep your feet on the ground for a while, isn't it?
It certainly is. I looked at my collection of boarding passes over the last 3 weeks or so, and it's impressive, I guess you would say, Rob.
Okay, impressive. That's one way of putting it indeed. Pretty impressive showing when you turn the clock back 12 months on a couple of commodities that we're going to be talking about today, Mickey. Iron ore and coking coal, key ingredients in the production of steel. From where they sit today, compare them to where they sat about 12 months ago, we're looking at price gains in the area of about 12%. But boy, oh boy, this has been a real wild ride this year. The first 6 months of this year, those prices have been all over the place.
Yeah, perhaps you're talking about iron ore up 12%, but coking coal is up 50% since a year ago. Mm-hmm. These are arguably the two most important commodities in the world in terms of industrial production because they're essential for steel. Mm-hmm. We've already talked about them in the past, but let's just analyze what's happened over the last year. We'll start with iron ore. We've had a very volatile 2017 with a high of $95 a ton and a low of $53. Overall year to date, iron ore has actually lost 16%. But compare that to 2015 when prices fell below $40 a ton. Price right now is about $70 a ton.
Okay, and why is the iron ore market in terms of price movement, Mickey, so volatile? I mean, you're talking about price swings that basically have gone from a bear to a bull market all within the span of about 3 months. You don't see that very often.
Oh, I think a lot of it has to do with Chinese demand, and for that world demand. World demand's up 4.5% this year. Even the U.S. is up 1.3%. And China came in with really good growth numbers for the second quarter, exceeded expectations. We have world record production and world record iron imports from China at plus 9%. And that's important because it produces half the world's steel, although it's not very good quality steel, and they're trying to do something about that.
Right.
But 70% of seaborne iron ore goes to China, and so from that point of view, a lot of it's about China. Then again, you have the banks and the analysts are very negative on iron ore in the short to long term. They're projecting lower prices for the second half of 2017, basically on oversupply, but demand's increasing, so we've got a couple of things pulling on the market. In the last 6 weeks, Rob, iron ore's gone from $53 a ton to $70 a ton, so extremely volatile market.
Okay, and among the people on the street basically predicting a U-turn in the price, Mickey, Macquarie, it's forecasting a slide in the price of iron ore, talking about it dropping to about $47 in 2018. So it's a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it, in terms of, you know, how they're coming up with these?
Well, it's Morgan Stanley and Citibank, too. Mm. But, you know, these bankers don't always understand what goes on in commodities. You know, I think in some ways it would be like listening to Codelco's price projections on copper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know what? And that plays very nicely into some comments that I've read from the head of Cliffs Natural Resources, which, as you know, Mickey, is the U.S. the largest producer in the United States of iron ore. You know, the boss there says don't bet on prices staying low or moving lower. He says if you're going to do that, you're going to assume that the big producers are stupid in terms of what they're doing, and they're not. He says, you know, supply side sanity will prevail in the long run.
Well, and that comes from a guy whose company was essentially bankrupt because of oversupply from the big miners from 2010 through arguably the beginning of 2016 or the first quarter of 2016. But, you know, Cliffs obviously thinks the market's bullish because they're restarting a mine in Minnesota and they're just announced plans to build a new plant for steel processing in Ohio. So from that point of view,
Is there
you've got differing opinions. Champion Iron Ore, which operates in Labrador Trough, that's an ex-Cliffs mine, and Sprott and a Quebec pension fund, and Sojitz, the giant Japanese industrial conglomerate, financed that to a tune of $180 million over the last month or so. Obviously, differing opinions on iron ore.
Yep.
You know, a lot of this, Rob, has to do with China is shutting down low-quality steel producers, which are polluters for the most price. That's also driven the price. Increasingly, with scrap prices being low, then you see the Chinese start to use more scrap. If you look at the numbers, in the U.S., 70% of our steel comes from scrap, as basically cars being crushed.
Right.
In China, that's 11%. So another thing pulling on the market downward and perhaps going into the idea of these banks and commodities analysts, they see a problem with Chinese scrap market. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is what it is, Rob.
Yeah. Another reason I think that has been cited by Morgan Stanley was there's a mine being operated by Vale in Brazil, ramping up production, and that's a pretty big operation.
Well, so that's what the banks are really worried about is oversupply once again. But look at the growth we have right now. On the other side, I mean, we could argue that you can take either side on this issue. Iron ore stocks at Chinese ports right now, basically on ships and not moving off, is at a 13-year high. So certainly mixed
signals,
messages on the iron ore end of this equation.
Okay, let's talk about the coking coal end of the equation, also known as metallurgical coal. Mickey, this has a very interesting price structure, doesn't it? It is set quarterly by Australian mining companies and steelmakers in Japan. Is that correct?
That's correct,
and
it affects all other world prices. This quarterly pricing contract, basically between, as you mentioned, Japanese steel mills and iron ore sources, has not worked for quite some time, and it's really reminiscent of what went on in the iron ore space before 2010. So now we're 8 years essentially into the new paradigm in iron ore, and there's a movement afoot to revamp this into monthly contracts. You know, coking coal or met coal, whatever you want to call it, is really dependent on the health of the steel industry, which is pretty healthy right now, and current supply demand fundamentals, and very much subjected to supply disruptions. And that's what happened this year. We had tropical storms or cyclones, whatever you want to call them, in Queensland.
Right.
Flooded mines caused significant rail damage. And so Australia, Queensland, which ships most of its coal to China, China couldn't get any coal. So we went from matching the all-time high in 2011, which is also due to flooding in Queensland in their late summer. To an oversupply which existed as soon as they came back on. So we've gone from a high of $330 a ton. Let me say that differently, Rob. We went from a low of $150 a ton in early April to a high of $330 a ton in mid-April. If you look at the year chart, two parabolic rises and falls in last year in met coal.
Okay, so supply fundamentals for met coal, are they kind of in line basically with iron ore because both are so dependent on the steel industry?
Well, certainly they are, but it's even more, much more volatile in met coal. You've got to have the iron ore, and then you get the met coal based on supply-demand fundamentals that you think are coming from the steel industry.
Right.
So let me give you just some, go through the numbers. In July of 2016, which is a year, it was $90 a ton. Mid-November to early December, it was $310 a ton.
Wow.
Mid-February to early April, $150. Mid-April, $330. Mid-June, $150. And now it stands at, this would be Australian benchmarks, now at $165 a ton. So the volatility in this market is mind-blowing. Therefore, the effort or the desire by Japanese smelters to do something different here.
Yeah, would that volatility diminish a little bit if they come up with a more flexible pricing structure, or would it be amplified?
Well, it would be shorter, let's
okay.
put it that way. So they would try to index on a monthly contract basis.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got spot prices, too, so not all coal is on a contract basis. It would
mm-hmm.
certainly smooth out some of the peaks and valleys in this in these charts.
Okay, and wrapping up, Mickey, what's your investing angle to this story? Where do you see opportunity, or do you?
Well, for the most part, these are major mining companies, some of the world's largest, BHP, Fortescue, Teck. So that doesn't really play into the junior resource sector. If you wanted to play iron ore, explorers or developers, there's certainly always things going on in Labrador Trough, but anybody that played that game got burned pretty bad
okay.
over the last few years. So not something that I would tend to play in. I much prefer things that are traded world exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no world exchange for iron ore or met coal. They're contracts only or spot markets.
Right.
So I prefer to play in the base metals and precious metals in this realm.
Okay, well, nice way to wrap it up, Mickey, and great to catch up with you. We'll reconnect in about a month's time. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.